Today on the Women Mind the Water Artivist series on womenmindthewater.com, I'm speaking with Manuela Zoensein. The Brazilian-American began her career as a journalist in China in 2007. There, in a country with more than a billion people, she witnessed a shift from reusable to single-use water bottles. Her awareness of the global crisis around water, her experience in academic studies at the MIT Sloan Executive MBA program inspired Manuela to develop a company focused on creating a sustainable hydration system. The Women Mind the Water Artivist Series podcast on womenmindthewater.com engages artists in conversation about their work and explores their connection with the ocean. Through their stories, Women Mind the Water hopes to inspire and encourage action to protect the ocean and her creatures. I am speaking with Manuela Zoensein, a Brazilian-American who has vivid memories of the beaches of Rio de Janeiro and an active mind designing and building a 21st century vending machine, one capable of sanitizing, refilling, and dispensing beverage containers. Her company, Cadeia, is on a mission to replace the single-use plastic bottle problem with an innovative, sustainable system that will be an important factor in addressing the plastic pollution crisis and reducing carbon dioxide. Welcome, Manuela. I am most interested to hear about Brazil's coast and learn about your journey from journalist to sustainable water advocate and entrepreneur. I don't know how many of my listeners are aware of the kind of work that goes into launching a business, particularly one designed to be a significant contributor in the work to curb plastic pollution. Let's begin by having you tell us a little bit about Brazil. Please describe the beaches that keep you coming back regularly.
Hi, Pam. Hi, everybody. It's a great pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me. So I am dialed in today actually from Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, which is where I was born. And we are in Rio proper, across from Ipanema Beach, which is one of the more famous beaches in the world. And if you've never had the chance to come down to Brazil, to Rio, and specifically to Ipanema, I, of course, can't recommend it enough. Everything you've heard is true and better. The beach that has really kept me coming back has a more immediate personal significance to me. And that's a beach called Itacoatiara, which I think is the most beautiful beach in the world that I've ever seen. It's across the Guanabara Bay from Rio de Janeiro.
Let me ask you, you like to walk on the beaches there, and you collect trash. What sort of changes have you noticed over the years in the amount or type of trash that you find during your walks?
Yeah, so when I was a kid and we would go to the beaches in Brazil and around Rio, it ends up being a family affair. It's like your public living room. Everybody goes when the day is hot. You know, on the weekend, you set up shop, you stay there for the day. And I remember we used to bring food. That was a common thing. You'd kind of bring a picnic and you'd set up for the day. And then at the end, you'd pack up and go home. And as you all are probably aware and familiar, right, the omnipresence of single-use packaging and the conveniences that those products afford us have led to people not bringing reusable containers that they carry to the beach for a picnic and for their hydration. And instead, people come empty-handed and buy products at the beach. And that is an amazing part of a lot of the beaches throughout Brazil. I'll say really quickly, Brazil national policy does not allow privatization of beaches. So you can access every single beach in Brazil, unlike in the United States. There's a whole secondary economy on the beaches. And you have beach vendors who specialize in different products that are very popular and localized. And so now you go to the beach and you it used to be you bring cash to buy, you know, your grilled cheese, and little guys walk around with little grills that they grill the cheese live there for you, and they coat them with different seasonings or with honey. or different cookies or crackers, and biscuits was one of the famous ones called Globu. And so while there's this great secondary economy that provides additional cash for, the lower echelons of the economic rungs here, the flip side of it is that there is just a lot more trash people leave behind. And depending on what area of the country and what city you're in, there's different levels of awareness. I've been surprised on this visit back to Rio. We come every year, that there's garbage bins now that are split into organics and recyclables. So starting to see a little bit of a conversation around that. Carnival has just started. There's the big Sambadrome, which is like the huge parade center for all the carnival competitions. You'll see the Samba schools parading down. Now they're trying to have reusable cups. So you see increments of sustainability conversation increasing. But for the most part, people come to the beach and it's both their living room, their public living room, but also their public garbage. And I've been shocked at how much garbage there is. And everybody is aware of it. I remember when I started walking on the beach in Itacoatiara and collecting garbage, there were teenagers who saw me do it and they're like, "Oh, it's cool that you're, they call it catando, which is collecting, and it's used in a lot of different kind of more casual formats. And, oh, cool that you're collecting the garbage." So people understand that there's a problem. I'm not seeing a scaled approach to how to solve that problem.
What made you decide to tackle the issue of plastic pollution? To be sure, it is an enormous challenge. Plastic debris makes up 80% of all marine debris.
Part of it was I had the opportunity to live in China between 2007 and 2015. As you mentioned, I had a previous life as a climate correspondent and started out in Beijing reporting for Newsweek and a construction publication called the Engineering News Record. One of the great takeaways of my time in China is I got the chance to see what happens when 1.5 billion people do anything. And you get to see in fast forward the benefits and the shortcomings of any policy or any economic decision. And I saw in front of my eyes what happens at scale with plastic waste. So I really came back to the US with that in my mind. And then the other key takeaways, two of them really quickly, is I saw, okay, society and culture change from reuse to single use. There's no reason, therefore, why behavior change can't also go the other direction, right? It shows you the malleability of culture and behavior change. And so I thought, well, what would it take to go in the other direction? And then the third takeaway was the US created this problem. We have to be the ones to create the solution. So when I moved back to the United States, ultimately in I spent a year back in Brazil on another startup, and then in 2016 relocated full time to the US and said, I'm going to figure this out.
So, was the idea to start your company one that dispenses reusable beverage containers a product of your MBA studies, or did you pursue the MBA so you could develop the idea for Kadea into a marketable concept?
Great question. So 2016, when I moved back to the US, I joined a software tech company headquartered out in Silicon Valley, but I was in their New York office. I was doing nothing related to sustainability for my day job. And the reason I was willing to do that is because they are and were one of the best companies in the world to this day for figuring out how do you present the right data to the right non-technical individual to make a great decision. In their case, it was in the business context, but I felt that learning how to present the data that matters to individuals at a moment where they're making decisions was critical to us winning this journey against climate change. On the side, I started the Sustainability Club, and as a club, we decided the problem we wanted to solve that we felt was within our reach was to help the company transition away from single-use beverage consumption. Like a lot of well-funded tech companies of the time, we had a very well-stocked kitchen, and every floor had packaged goods that you could go and grab for free at any time. And I would sit in the kitchen doing work on my laptop and watch people go to the fridges, even though we had refill stations of all types. We had unlimited kombucha on tap and cold brew coffee on tap. So we had the basics in place for a reusable system. We had glasses ready to go that you could grab out of the kitchen and refill, but people were not using them. They were going to the fridge, opening the fridge door, and grabbing a bottle of whatever. We wanted to figure out why and to try to change that behavior. And what we ultimately did is we designed a reusable water bottle program for the company and over 3 years defrayed single use by about 30%. And so I took that insight with me to business school.
Well, so whether you're trying to convince an investor or somebody who's giving grants, I imagine you can't do it just on an idea on a piece of paper. You have to have a working model or a prototype. So where does somebody get the money to build the prototype?
So you do have to network your way to meet wealthy individuals who have themselves had already some sort of financial exit and who are aligned with your idea. So anyone out there who has an idea, get started building that network because it takes time and it also really does pay off. I'm now connecting with people who I met 4 years ago and I kept them in mind. And I tracked them and I kept in touch. And now they are going to potentially be able to invest in Kadeya. I was very focused on proving out the potential of my idea without building the full technology.
Okay, so I'm really interested about this machine. It sells containers, which is not a new idea, but it also accepts back the used containers and then the machine cleans and refills them. Doesn't that mean you have to have a really large machine to do all those functions?
Yeah, you've got most of that right. So our machine is a bit wider than like a double door fridge that you would have at home. You go up to that machine and we have a touch screen that lets you pick out what beverages you want. We don't only serve water now. We also have carbonated products, flavored products. We can do cold brew coffee and iced tea. You pick your beverage and then a stainless steel bottle, which is our custom design and has been pre-washed, sanitized, and inspected, drops down and then gets filled kind of like a soda fountain. And then we cap it and you grab your bottle. The idea there is we are emulating the experience of a vending machine or that fridge at your workplace that you open the door and reach in and grab it. That in about 10 seconds, you can have a packaged beverage that you grab and go. You enjoy that beverage, and then when you're done, you can return that bottle to any station in the network. The analogy here is bike sharing for bottles. You're just borrowing the bottle. So you're not buying the bottle, you're buying the product. You're buying your Coke, you're buying your Gatorade to enjoy, and then return that bottle over here, over what would my right shoulder, and then the bottle gets inspected to make sure there isn't major debris like cigarette butts, bubble gum, plastic wrappers, chicken bones, in which case we would reject the bottle. Assuming the bottle is generally free of debris, we accept the bottle and then it goes through a rigorous wash and sanitize procedure, and then a dry process, and then finally a final inspection where we can identify a blonde hair, a hairline fracture, a chip on the lip, or a dent on the side. If there are any problems with that sanitized bottle, we will reject it internally. We have a little reject bin. Otherwise, that bottle goes into a little storage facility or box that is humidity and temperature controlled and awaiting the next consumer to come and
This is
order their
done
beverage.
all in one machine.
All in one machine.
Amazing. So you said you have an Air Force contract. Why was the Air Force, or what problem did they want to address that they wanted a Kadeya machine?
It turns out the problem Kadeya is solving, if we think back to what I was saying about, as environmentalists digging into why single use works today, the problem we end up solving as compared to single use is a logistics problem. So with single use in these environments, the employer is currently providing pallets and pallets and pallets of bottled water. These are bought wholesale at your Costco, Walmart, and then somebody is loading those pallets on the back of a truck. Somebody is driving that truck. Somebody's unloading those pallets, often to some sort of local storage on-site facility. And then someone is forklifting those pallets to where the workers are. And then someone is cutting open those pallets of, the plastic wrap, and then handing out bottles or restocking coolers in hot months. That is a huge logistical lift to make sure that then an individual has a container in his or her hand full of good quality water that they can then tip back and drink. In Kadea's case, by connecting to the existing water line, we're providing that bottled beverage where the worker is without any of those logistics that I just described.
You really made it clear. And there's so many questions that I could ask you. We don't have enough time for it. So I'm going to ask you, given your experience with Kadea, I wonder how you would advise listeners to tackle a problem that is important to them. Where should someone start?
You have to be utterly obsessed with solving the problem because every day you are going to face barriers. Every day people are going to say no. I get more no's. I get nine no's for every one yes because I so believe in what Kadea is doing and I so believe in the problem that needs to be solved. And I believe that I'm the right person to do it and the time is now. So that's the first thing. Be obsessed. Get to know everything and everyone in that space. And then start to develop an understanding of where others are not doing it well, in your opinion. Develop that opinion, develop that hypothesis, and then continually improve that. The next point is, and this is, I think, scary, especially for women, because a lot of us have been raised to be perfectionists and to open our mouths with an idea only once we feel that we've improved the idea and tested it. You got to throw that away. I like to say, don't be a perfectionist. Don't get good at being perfect. Get good at being good enough. And what that entails is talking about your idea before you know enough to have the right comments. And people will criticize you and be okay with that and accept it. And enjoy it because those early criticisms, that early feedback is going to lead to such rapid iteration of your idea. And that's what I was doing at MIT. I was saying, I think I want to build City Bike for bottles. I hadn't baked out that idea. And people said, well, that's crazy. How are you going to get the bottles back? I said, that's a good point. And then I sat down for months and worked on that.
I feel your passion. I feel hope that maybe this plastic bottle situation has an advocate like you that we will make a big bite in it. So thank you for your passion and for you being willing to step up and try and make a difference. I'd like to remind listeners that I've been speaking with Manuela Zoensheim, founder and CEO of Kadea, a company focused on reducing plastic consumption and thus making the beverage industry more sustainable. Manuela Zoensheim is the latest guest on the Women Mind the Water Artivist Series podcast. This series can be viewed on womenmindthewater.com, Museum on Main Street, and YouTube. An audio-only version of this podcast is available on womenmindthewater.com, on iTunes, and Spotify. Women Mind the Water is grateful to Jane Rice for the use of her song, Women of Water. All rights for the Women Mind the Water name and logo belong to Pam Ferris Olson. This is Pam Ferris Olson.